This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
Welcome to the show. This is FUBAR Radio. We are currently doing a live 24-hour marathon, all for the He For She campaign to raise money and raise awareness. We are working with UN Women UK during Arts Week London. Now, if you want to get involved by donating, and you know, the He For She campaign is all about gender equality. We as women need to work side by side with men to get our voice heard, to get our stories told and really make a difference. We want to start the conversation on this show and raise awareness. So if you want to donate, all money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. Text UNWN15 followed by the amount you want to donate to 770. I'm also joined by Kayla Stark. Are you having a lovely morn?
Oh, you're such a good hostess. I'm having a lovely morning. Thank you, darling.
That's all right, my darling. Thank you very, very much. I think we need another guest, don't you?
Yes, absolutely.
On the phone lines right now, we've got Robin Vinter. Robin, hello.
Hello.
Hello, Robin. Thank you so much for joining us. How are you today?
Yeah, really good, thank you.
Good.
Yeah, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing good. Doing
she
good.
Is. She's doing very well.
I don't really know what day it is. I'm not going to lie to you, Robin. no idea. But doing very, very good. Now, Robin, you are the founder and editor-in-chief at The Overtake.
Yeah.
Tell us about The Overtake, first of all.
We are a news website for millennials. So we do good quality news. Good quality journalism. Everything that we produce is completely original. So, you know, sometimes you see kind of when you're looking at different newspapers, you see that they all have the same stories and we all kind of copy each other. We don't do any of that. So everything we do is completely unique. And it's all kind of long form articles. So there's kind of a perception that young people don't want to read that stuff. And that's not true. You know, we found that people are happy to read long articles as long as it's about things that they're interested in.
Yeah, very, very true, very true. And, you know, you've also been contributed to The Guardian, BuzzFeed, yes, and iNews. How did you get into writing? Is it something you've always wanted to do? How did it happen for you?
I can remember distinctly when I was doing my A-levels, and I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I'm just somebody who's not very good when I don't know what I want to do. Yeah. I'm okay, once I know, I'm fine, but... Yeah. And I remember my boyfriend at the time, I was around his house talking to his parents, and I was like, I don't know what I want to do. And his mum was like, oh, well, I think you'd be quite a good journalist. And then I was like, and then I just, and that was it.
That
gave me the idea to do it. So then, yeah, I did a degree in journalism, and then was one of the kind of very few lucky ones to actually get a job in the industry, because it's so difficult. I was just very lucky that a place that I'd done work experience, a job came up not long after. So so I was very fortunate, because it's not that easy for most people.
It really is, and that's actually what we've been talking about a lot during the show. We've had a lot of actors, comedians, singers, and talking about how difficult it is, because it is, isn't it? I think a lot of people think, oh, you know, you go to uni, come out, easy peasy. But there's a lot of rejection, isn't there? There's a lot of grafting and hustling. Tell us about that side of it.
Yeah, especially for, like, it's really difficult for... In journalism, I'm not so sure about the other industries, but in journalism, there's a lot of working for free often before you get a job. So again, I was really lucky. I did 3 weeks work experience. I did a week... So the first week of work experience that I did was at Farmers Weekly magazine, which is an agricultural magazine. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't what I wanted to do at all, but as part of my course, they forced us to do work experience. I'm really glad that they did, because I wouldn't have done it otherwise, because it didn't interest me. Mm-hmm. And then because I've been forced to do that work experience, they had a job available, and I was really lucky. So I only actually did probably 3 weeks unpaid, you know, work experience.
Wow.
Which is just crazy to think now, because actually most people who get into journalism end up writing for free for a while. It's obviously there's a kind of financial pressure to that, So a lot of young people are, very, very talented, but don't have the financial backing from, wealthy parents or even just middle class parents. So, they just end up not being able to make it, which is really sad.
Do you know what? That's one of my bugbears, actually, I think, as a freelancer, is the amount of, could you do this job for free for experience? You wouldn't get that in any other industry, would you? And I always think, it's because, you're always going to find someone that will do more hours for free.
Yeah.
Do you think that will ever stop? Or do you think, again, because you're a freelancer and because we do need experience and there will always be those people that take those jobs for free, do you think it will never change? And you're taking advantage, isn't it? We are being taken advantage as freelancers.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of a fine line because obviously when you're first trying to get into the industry, you aren't as, you're not as good as somebody who's been writing for, 10 years or, whatever. So people do get what they pay for, generally speaking, I think. And I think people will start to wise up to that a little bit. So, at the moment, editors are just very under pressure, so they'll get people to do it for free. But then I think quality is going to win out eventually. I think people are going
to
realise that.
To.
Yeah, and that's it. And I really obviously want to give a lot of young people opportunities in journalism that they don't already have. But there is an obvious difference often with the quality of their work compared to somebody that, that's got a lot more experience. And you can't always tell, when a freelancer comes to you and says, "Oh, I've got this idea for an article, can I write it for you?" Sometimes, and then they give you some examples of the work that they've done. You can't always tell that someone's a student or not, which is, fine, and I don't blame them for that at all. But you can usually tell when the work arrives because, just simple rules that they haven't learned yet and things like that, and you wouldn't have expected them to have learned them already. But so I do think people, hopefully they'll, I don't know how it's going to be and where the money in the industry is going to come from, but I do think that people are going to start realizing that there is a distinct difference between people who've been writing for a long time and people who haven't.
I suppose it's just a case of not exploiting the unpaid work and taking it too far, which I suppose, and actually we're seeing a lot more laws in place to protect that, from happening to students or young writers and young freelancers as well, which is good.
I think you're absolutely right. I think it'll get worse before it gets better, but I do think it'll get better.
Yeah, I agree. And this is obviously this show is in support of the He for She campaign, and we were talking a lot about obviously sexism in many different industries. What, if any, sexism have you come across being a female writer in this industry?
I think I've been relatively lucky. So I think a lot of it comes from not journalists and journalism and the place that you work, but the people that you end up interacting with. So quite often, I used to be a business journalist, so I'd go and interview the boss of a company or something. And I could just tell that he'd be, dismissive, because I was a young woman, he'd be dismissive of my questions. I'd get asked what my experience was and things like that, which not always is due to sexism. I think sometimes that's probably due to ageism. But then there's the other side of it where, I remember coming back from an interview once in one of my previous jobs, and I got back to the office and I was telling everyone about the interview. And I was like, oh yeah, and then he just put his hand on my leg. And then the other women in the office were like, oh, that's annoying. And the men were like, what? He did what? And they were like, oh, do you want me to go and speak to him? And, they were really shocked that something like that would happen. Yeah, whereas, the women are much more, accustomed to that kind of behaviour from older men, I guess.
Well, that's exactly what Rachel and I were talking about earlier. We were actually saying the hand on ear, and we both just went, oh, yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, gosh, yeah, we know that one. Because, and I think, you're right, men are quite often shocked by it because they don't realise how definitely. Often it happens. Yeah,
that's it. And because we don't really talk about it, it just came up in conversation when when I'd got back to the office. But because we don't talk about it very often, they just don't know often. I think there's the men that do it, the perpetrators that know what they're doing, but the, you know, everybody else often just doesn't know about it.
Yeah, it's very, very true. It's very true. Robin Vinter, we're going to have to say our farewells. Annoyingly, I could chat to you for ages about this. But thank you for talking to us. Thank you for taking the time out.
No problem.
And have a wonderful morning.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Too. Hope you get on all right.
I hope I keep my voice. And yeah. Thank you so much, Robin. Take care.
Bye.
That was Robin Vinter there, founder and editor-in-chief at The Overtake. And again, made a very interesting point. In the fact that the free stuff as a freelancer that we get offered, I get offered even now, it's like, I don't need the experience. I've had a lot of hours. I can definitely add a lot of hours to the rota. But it is exploitation. But because you're a freelancer, you don't argue, you don't rock the boat. So there's lots, I think, in this industry to change. There really, really is. Now, we are going to have a guest in the studio very shortly. We've got Roxy, and I believe her surname, but I will double check when I meet her. Roxy Nafusi, writer, blogger, and mental health ambassador, coming into the studio very, very shortly. But I think we should play some music, and I'm just trying to think. I know which music I'm going to play. Now, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a little breather. We'll be back very, very shortly. This is My Favourite Game by The Cardigans.
You haven't found it, baby, that's for sure. You rip me off, you spread me all.
Now that was Cardigan's My Favourite Game. And we've got in the studio Roxy Nafusi. Did I pronounce that correctly this
time?
You
did. Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so impressed by how good you look this morning.
It's a mockery of a sham rolled up in a lot of makeup. A hell of a lot. But I like how quite a lot of people are saying, you're doing really well. It's like, let's see if I actually reach the 5 o'clock, because it's still borderline at times. But it's wonderful to have you here for our show, for the UN Women UK and He for She campaign. You're a writer, blogger, mental health ambassador. Yes. And I know you want to talk about, first of all, why women feel the need to look a certain way to be accepted. And this is a huge conversation. It's so... And we touched on this. My background, I used to be a dancer, and I used to have an eating disorder for a lot of it. And it was something, and again, that's still quite a taboo. A lot of people don't understand really what an eating disorder is. And it's embedded, I think, in females, how we've got to look. It goes back when you look at fairy tales, that, the beautiful one is the one that everything... Where do we even begin with this? Where do we even begin with... why we feel the need of how we look to like ourselves? Where do we start with this?
I mean, I honestly don't even know where we start. But I think now that people are talking more about mental health and people are coming out and being more open about their depression, anxiety, we can start looking at what the root causes are.
Yeah.
And I think for women, there are lots of different causes, but the pressure to look a certain way is just astronomical.
Yeah.
And it started, people, I think because we're talking about it now, you kind of think it's more now than it was, but I don't think it is actually. I think it's always been like this. We just haven't been as open about it. But for me, I opened up about my issues with depression because I wanted to use the platform that I had to, reach out to other women. But I know it started definitely when I was young at school and flicking through magazines, and we didn't understand what airbrushing was. So you genuinely believed that people's skin was like that, and I had acne. So I was like, what? How is their skin that good?
But it plants that seed. It's already...
100%. Yeah. And then, at school it was normal for girls to have eating disorders almost. Yeah. Everyone would miss lunch, and it was... a battle of being, the skinniest, the best
people
looking.
People were unaware of it, weren't they? People were completely unaware of it when they were doing it.
Yeah.
It was just normal to be, it was just like, that's what girls do.
Yeah. Like, I have found like a sheet, it was like, our diet, although it was full of sugar, it was like one piece of toast for lunch with jam and one tea with eight sugars.
But we all did it. It's so true. But again, you're planting that seed. And when you... opened up about your depression, what's the reaction you got?
I probably couldn't have expected how good it was, in the sense that so many people reached out saying that they felt the same, and that knowing that someone else felt it, they didn't feel as lonely. I think because I put so much of my life on social media, and I am definitely one of those people that also only puts the best bits and the highlights, I sort of felt bad that I was... Firstly, I looked at my Instagram feed and I thought... if I looked at this from another person, I'd think, God, she's so arrogant. She's so confident. She's so, got a perfect life. And it's just so not the case. And I think there is a sense of responsibility to say, actually, this isn't like this. And I'm only posting the days where I feel good. And actually, behind that, there is a lot of, a lot of damage, I guess, which I think I've overcome now through speaking about it and through being able to help other people. But being honest and authentic is a big thing for me. So it really made me a lot happier that I could actually start to open up about it and help other people.
What is this stigma, do you think? I'll say in this country with mental health, why do we still find it so hard to talk about it? Why do we have this fear of being, I guess, judged?
I think there's a sense that being unhappy isn't very cool, and it's not very likable.
It's weak.
And you think that, people are going to judge you and not want to be around you, basically. I think no one wants a moaner or a complainer. And you feel that by saying, I'm feeling really low, I'm feeling that, you're being a bit of a mood hoover, like killing someone's vibe. Everyone's like, she's got such good energy, she's so this, and that's what you want to be. Everyone wants to be that good energy. So when they don't feel like as happy as they could. Mm. I think that's why they tend to isolate themselves, which then makes the problem worse.
It escalates the problem. It really, really does. And we mentioned before about kind of the pressures on young women. I always say, if I was born quite a few years ago, and I had things like Instagram and all the filters, I don't know where I would have been. I really, really don't. How much does that affect your mental health when you just look at all these pictures and you just want to be perfect? How much does it affect someone?
I think massively.
Yeah.
But I think, because I love social media and I hate it at the same time, and I think what's really key is knowing when you are able to use it without it letting you get you down. So I think if you're feeling confident in yourself and you have lots of self-love, you're not looking at other people as competition, which we do a lot as women, you know.
But then the press are always putting us against each other and, you know, look how they've aged, look at this, look at that.
Exactly.
And we are put in that competition.
Yeah.
But it's not...
I wrote about it yesterday on my Instagram because I think, like, it does all start with self-love. And if we don't have love in ourselves, we're going to see other people as, oh my gosh, they're better than us. They have something that I wish that I possessed.
Yes.
So that can make social media bring out lots of negative feelings and lots of unhappiness, lots of comparison, lots of... self-judgment. But if you're on there,
don't worry, I don't even know.
But one of the interesting things is how much things have changed in the sense of, so magazines, I remember when I was younger, there would be this whole pages dedicated to circling celebrities' faults. Like, she's got look at this. And
course.
What's fascinating is they've actually, you know, made magazines pretty much get rid of that because it's a ridiculous thing that no one will buy into anymore.
Yeah.
However, now we're doing it to ourselves. So, you know, the young girls on Instagram are actually getting their pictures and they are circling their faults and covering them and, you know, photoshopping them before they put them online. So it's interesting how we've moved away from, we can't do that to people and it's not fair to highlight, negative, anything that's seen as negative, and now we're actually all doing it to ourselves, which is an interesting journey.
It seems like quite a natural thing to pull ourselves down. So, you know, you mentioned self-love. What is the first step in finding that self-love for people that are struggling with it?
I think if you're in that sort of in that frame of mind where you're not feeling like you're loving yourself, I would get off social media for a time.
I think we all need to do that sometimes.
Yeah.
It's healthy, I think,
because
to do that.
That's you're always going to see something that is going to make you upset, whether it's a friend at a party. Like, can you imagine being 15 and your parents didn't let you go to a party and then you see your friends there? You know,
you'd feel awful. Yeah, you would.
So I think it's getting off social media for a week and really going back to where these insecurities began. And usually they do begin at school with the popularity contests and
it affects you. It does.
And you know, those, you know, girls that have eating disorders at school, you know, it really doesn't leave you. I think the insecurity just changes. So while it starts with maybe an obsession with food, then, you know, it could change to an obsession with boys or work or, you know, the pressures change, but they're always there and they start really early on. So it's going back and looking at your inner child, I think, and really sort of saying, okay, where did this stem from? But what has been doesn't mean who I'm going to be. So allowing yourself that space to really be with those feelings, understand them, and then start working on them.
So you writer, blogger, explain, how have you ended up to be this mental health ambassador? Was it the writing first that then brought you to social media? How did it work for you?
I think it started as social media and the blogging, and I felt a bit empty from it. Not that it's not an amazing job, because it is, and a lot of people do it phenomenally well, but I'm not one of those people. I can't stand in the street and I hate having my picture taken. I get so nervous and like really anxious, and I just feel like it's like a light on all your insecurities. So I wasn't able to really be the best blogger because I just didn't have that confidence for it. But I always loved writing, and then I was writing a bit for Marie Claire online, and that's when I did my first big article really coming out about how unhappy I was at the time. And definitely I thought, oh, everyone's going to think I'm such a loser.
Yeah,
you know,
because you're so raw and vulnerable, because you are putting a part of you out there.
Yeah,
you know, to have people give you their opinion on.
Exactly, but I think I'm quite like that in all of my life. I can't lie.
Yeah.
And like I can't be like I tell everyone everything.
Brilliant.
It's like a constant stream of my feelings.
Yes.
My friends all think I'm mad because I'm like, I'm feeling so bubbly today, I'm feeling sad today, you know, there's a constant stream.
It's kind of what I'm like. This is running commentary of the roller coaster of what I'm feeling right now
by the hour,
literally. Oh, it has been. I tell you, there's a few lost hours I've had of the last 24. Obviously, this is all for the He For She campaign, men and women working together. We have spoken about the women's side of this, of the mental health issues. But men, you know, we are, I guess, more fortunate in the way that we can talk to each other.
Yeah.
Men can't. They talk to each other less. So what do men do if they are struggling with this? What can they turn to?
Well, I think that's almost why men are... really not in relationships. Don't you find that, you know, the girlfriend is really the best friend for the man?
Yeah,
you know,
that's so true.
Whereas us girls, we have each other, so when we go for lunch, we kind of counsel each other.
Yeah, we do.
You know, and you come out and you feel good.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, because in the industry I'm in, I think there is a sense that men are able to be more open. But if say look at the city, you know, it's that boys
stiff upper lip kind of attitude, and
shut up, get over it. You know, if a guy breaks up with a girl, it's like, oh, move on, find someone else, you know, and they can't deal with it.
And they can't release any emotion, really, because they've got to be the guy keeping up appearances.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, if you go on the Mental Health Foundation website, there are a lot of ways there are a lot of, like, different places that men can go to speak to people that maybe they don't know, which might be easier for them. You know, counselling, therapy. You know, but also just... I don't think women and men are really judging each other the same way that they were. So I think hopefully, you know, once, you know, men, we're all innately nice, kind people, I believe.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if you're listening and you're a man, you know, and you are feeling low, open up to someone, because people want to help other people and they want to hear. And there are people that are willing to listen, and it doesn't make you less of a man or anything like that, you know, actually makes you more of a man, that you can open up about your vulnerability.
I agree. I think it's very, very brave. And say if you were to look back 5 years ago, 10 years ago to now, do you think that stigma is changing? Do you see us, again, talking about this so much more freely? Or do you think we've still got a way to go?
Definitely. I think 5 years ago, a friend told me that someone else in my family was depressed. And I remember thinking, that was such an insult. I was like, she's not depressed, are you mad? You know, and I was so insulted by it.
Yeah.
Whereas now, if, you know, someone said, you know, you're depressed, or so-and-so is, you know, suffering from depression, there would be an empathy with it, not that's an insult.
Yeah.
You know? So I think the stigma is changing 100%.
Yeah, and it will only keep on changing. It really, really will. That's all we've got time for. With you, Roxy.
Thank you.
So much. What is your Instagram? It's going to be Instagram right now.
It's
going to
be a long day.
About 18 hours in. It's an Instagram. What's your Instagram?
It's Roxy Nafusi.
Amazing. And people can maybe reach out to you on there if they're
Yes, I really love speaking to people. So direct message me and I can do whatever I can to help.
That's amazing. Thank you for taking the time out to talk to
Thank
us.
You
I really
so
appreciate
much.
It. We're going to take a very short break. This is the Yeah Yeah Yeahs with Zero.
Shake it like a ladder to the sun. Makes me feel like a madman on the run. Find me never, never far gone. So get your leather, leather, leather on.
welcome back. That was the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. This is FUBAR Radio. My name is Rachel Downey. We are currently very, very deep into the live 24-hour marathon show, all in aid for the He For She campaign. We're working alongside UN Women UK. Now, if you want to get involved, and for me, the whole point of this show is to raise awareness and raise money for the fantastic He For She campaign. Now, all money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. Now, all you need to do to donate is text a UNWN15 followed by the amount you would like to donate to 770. That's 770. If you want to find out any other information, just go to londonartsweek.org. Now, in the studio, is there any... Do you want to put your headphones on? That might help.
Oh, might.
You'll be able to hear all my dulcet tones. In the studio, we've got Michelle... Is it Panetta?
Yeah.
Michelle Panetta. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time out to join us today. It's lovely.
Thank you so much.
I'm very excited with the fact you're a yoga instructor with 23 years experience, and you introduced Bikram yoga to the UK.
I did, yeah, 1994.
That is incredible.
Wow.
I've been living in Los Angeles and I'd done it there to fix my knees, and it worked. So I accidentally started teaching it when I came to London, and it took off. So
what is it about, first of all, we'll talk about Bikram yoga. What is it about Bikram yoga that made you want to literally bring it to the UK? What are the benefits?
Well, I didn't plan to bring it. It was just that it worked on my knees.
Yeah.
And so I'd been a martial artist before and ruined both my knees doing that. And so I was amazed that you could actually fix things without needing surgery necessarily. So that's why I started teaching it. And did that for about 15 years, and then 5 years ago I had developed my own yoga system, which is now Fierce Grace, which is what we are now.
Yeah.
And we now have seven studios in London.
Wow.
And 23 outlets. We've just opened in New York and also in Rome, so it's very exciting.
That is incredible. How did it come then for you to create Fierce Grace Yoga? Did you see a gap in the market? Do you how did it happen?
Yeah, it grew sort of organically out of teaching 500,000 people and over 17 years and seeing what they needed, seeing what they wanted, seeing where they were going elsewhere to get other variety and things like that, and talking to them, and then my own body and the bodies of all my teachers. And we just... Yeah, it just basically developed over a long time. I've been all over the world, done yoga with all kinds of different teachers, and there wasn't anything that was ticking my box. So I was like, this isn't doing it for me. I couldn't find anything that was what I wanted, which had, you know, the right combination of, you know, really strong stuff to get you fit and healthy, but also had some soft stuff for those days when you just like feel like you just cannot have somebody push you too hard.
I
developed, you know.
I think we might have one of those days now.
I'm going to push you through it.
Oh, yes. Well, do you know what? I would say the embarrassing thing is Michaela and I both used to be dancers. I used to be a professional dancer. I think I've done yoga like twice.
Yeah.
And I used to be a ballerina. I don't know enough about yoga. I don't know whether it's because I feel like, it's a very scary concept because I don't know it. I don't feel comfortable going to a class.
Exactly.
So is that a very common...
It's so common. And that's one of the reasons why I've done what I've done, because everyone I would meet would say the same thing, even athletes or, you know, someone's mum or dad. They're just... feel that there's this kind of club that they feel excluded from, and they don't know what they're going to get when they went there. So I think part of our branding just grew out of wanting people to feel really comfortable.
Yeah.
So we don't use beautiful skinny models, you know. We just use the people that come to class, you know, geezers and like muscly people and people who are a bit overweight, people who do crap postures, and used to be photographed the posture, like, you know, probably Yoga Magazine wouldn't think it was technically correct, but that's the best that person can do, and it makes it feel much more comfortable for people. I didn't even put yoga in the name of my yoga, because I just think sometimes people make connotations with it. You're just moving your body in a really, really sensible way that doesn't destroy your joints over time. And it's just, there's 900 moves in the whole of yoga, and we just chose the best ones, and it's just a really practical thing.
Already that makes you feel a lot more comfortable. Look, I know we are, we don't have too much time, but you are going to show us some moves.
Yes, well,
some yoga moves.
I was wondering what you might want. Do you want to feel more relaxed? Would you?
No.
Would you like to have a bit more energy?
I will be horizontal.
Okay, so we need to wake you up a little and give you a bit of a...
Give me a little bit of zhoosh.
Okay, let's zhoosh you up a little bit then.
Think it's time I got zhooshed.
I'm going to teach you the first one, which is a little bit less known. It's not really a yoga pose. It's a sort of combination of breathing and getting digestion and energy going.
Yeah,
so
I'm ready.
Are we going to stand up and do this?
Let's do it.
Okay.
I can stand.
It's harder than it looks just to get some people. You've been a dancer, so you'll probably get it in no time. So you basically have your feet apart and have your arms like this, like you're going to power walk. And if you don't concentrate on your hips, imagine that your hips are like a turntable.
Yeah.
You know, a record on a turntable. Yes. And if you just move your arm, oh my God, that's good. You move your hips back and forth like this, like you're one of those American washing machines. And you suck your stomach in and you lift your chest up. And now we're going to do it much faster. And we're going to do this with our nose breathing.
Oh, wow. Okay, get a head rush.
You'll get a head rush.
Is that blowing out or?
Through the nose, exhaling. And just, yeah, my God, you guys are good. And suck your stomach in. And what's this doing? It's waking up your digestion. It's improving your entire spine top to bottom. And you're going to get a stitch in a minute, you'll find.
Because
you don't need your coffee in the morning if you do this, let me put it that way, without too much detail. So let's do it a little bit faster. Left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. This is a kundalini exercise to waken all your energy.
Ooh, I'm getting a head rush.
Feeling
head rush.
The stitch.
All right, so you would do that as long as you can. Yeah, my God, you guys.
Would you usually recommend
good.
You don't have beers before doing this?
Well, if you did have them, they would be sooner out of you. At the end of it. All right, so we won't do that for too long, but you should feel a little bit oxygenated.
I do.
And it's really good for your spine. It actually irrigates all the discs of your spine. It tones your waistline as well. Next one, this is great if you're just really tired. You've been sitting. The gravity has pressed all your vertebrae and neck together. You're just going to bend your knees. You're going to hang forward. I don't know whether you can be heard, but I'll talk while you hang. Just bend your knees and hang forward all the way so your stomach touches your thighs. Bend your knees and let your head and neck just relax. And that's going to create traction from coccyx to neck and stretch hamstrings, glutes, and bring some lovely circulation up into your head, neck, and brain. And just take some deep breaths. You can press the knees back a little bit more if you want more of a stretch. And the lower back's nice and long. Your arms are hanging. You can hold your elbows if you like to get some more traction through the shoulders. And just take another deep breath there. And then what I think you should do is come to your knees. Have we got time for one more? Can you go onto your knees down there?
I'll be back.
I'm doing it.
We're almost done. I'll be back.
So this, do you have space to do this? You're on all fours. And now this is a great way of waking up your spine, digestion, hips, and glutes. Now you might not have room, but you're going to extend your right leg out behind you straight and your left arm up in front of your ear if you have room. And I don't sink your lower back. Pull the belly up to the spine and roll the right hip down and lock the knee. Now, if you lift your leg higher, you'll warm up your glutes and hips. If you lift your arm higher, you'll stretch and strengthen shoulder. And now put the left hand back down. Leave the leg up. I want you to touch your head to your knee and exhale round the spine. So bend your right knee, touch your head to your knee, and then inhale, kick it back up again slowly. Be careful you don't bang your head on the desk. Arching the spine. Three more. Exhale, head to knee. That's opening the lower back. And go ahead, inhale, eyes up, leg up. Couple more. This is waking up your spine. It's going to really help the oxygenation of the body, digestion and elimination. If you've been a bit sluggish sitting in the chair, one more. And one more.
Tough teacher.
Yeah.
Good. Do the other side if you have time. Otherwise, those of you listening at home, you would obviously do the other side.
Yeah, I think... Well, I thought...
Well, those are quite... easy, non-stretchy ones, because if you've been sitting in a chair, I don't want to jump into some advanced pose.
That is amazing. Well, look, thank you very, very much. I think I've got head rush. I'm not going to lie.
That's a good thing to do. If it's like a long day in the office, if you can find yourself like a square space.
Honestly, and you can do stuff
and you've been
chair
sat at the
well.
Desk all day. Yeah, that's fantastic. Cool.
Better than a coffee, really.
Yes.
Michelle, thank you so much for joining us this
You're
morning.
You're very welcome.
Where can we find out about Fierce Grace Yoga?
Just go to fiercegrace.com and all the studios and details about all the different classes are on there.
That is amazing. And it makes me feel very like I can approach it with ease. It really does.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
We are going to listen to Cheap Thrills featuring Sean Paul by Sia. Don't go anywhere. We're back shortly. See you there with Cheap Thrills. This is FUBAR Radio. Thank you for joining us if you have just tuned in. We are currently embracing the live 24-hour show, all for the UN Women UK He for She campaign. And in the studio right now, we've got Rothwell.
Good morning.
Welcome. Thank you so, so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
You're like a ray of sunshine. Oh. You really are. The smiles and everything. It's beautiful. Now, you are a Bristol-based singer-songwriter, and it says here you're championed by Mr. Jam, Annie Mac, and Justin Bieber. You supported Bieber on his 2017 arena tour.
I did.
That is insane. You are aware of that, aren't you?
It's quite mad.
How did that that even happen?
So I was actually singing with these guys called The Knox, who are, they did, I think, the whole universe with him, pretty much. And I guest vocaled with them for a couple of the dates, and it was absolutely insane. The amount of people and the screaming girls is something I'll never experience ever again.
Was it insane?
It was so crazy. They all just sort of got so excited, and I was like, you don't know who I am. Thank you so much.
I'm taking it all.
But I can't imagine what it must be like when he gets up there with all those people staring and screaming. But it was absolutely amazing.
Well, describe your style of music.
It's very much pop, which I've grown up on and I love.
Yeah.
It's sort of electro-pop, pop. I originally did more folk and sort of singer-songwritery stuff, but I've been writing for the last couple of years and it's sort of developed into what it is now, which is so much more fun to do live. I was very sad of making people cry.
Brilliant.
Not that I always did.
I've been weeping there like a baby. Trust me. The emotions are quite raw anyway right now. Yeah. You know, very tender. So with you, with music, is it something you've always loved? How did you always know you wanted to do it? Was it writing music? How did it all?
I grew up doing singing lessons at school. I was always part of the musical theatre thing, which I steered away from quite early on, but it definitely got me interested. I was in Oliver and Fagin's gang, never had a line, but she was there at the back, and it was so much fun, and I just sort of developed it from there. And I used to sing in school concerts, and I'd always have to have someone accompany me because I couldn't play the guitar. So their mum was like, why don't you learn the guitar? And then through that, I started writing my own songs, and then it just developed into this big thing, and I went to study it for a couple of years at uni, and it's just gone from there, really.
What would you say, as a female in the music industry, has been the most, I guess, challenging, and do you experience sexism?
I do. I think I am quite good at covering things with humour, so if someone says something to me that I'm like, oh, wow, you wouldn't say that to another man, I'll try and cover it and make it funny and take the mick out of them. But I definitely do. You are taken less seriously. And it's difficult to find the hard... Yeah, it's difficult to find the medium line of, if you're being bossy, you become... I think Nicki Minaj once said, quote, it's like, if you're a boss and you're tough, you become a bitch. But if you're weak and don't make your own decisions, you're a walkover. Or you're trying to be nice, then you're a walkover, and it's a nightmare.
Men don't have that. You get a man in a powerful position. He's strong. He's, you know, he's respected. But it's so true. A woman in that powerful position, she's a bitch.
Yeah.
You get that.
There's always an element of wanting to be nice because you're scared that people will think, oh, she's a diva. Diva's like the worst word.
Do you know, well, that's so true. Because you don't get that for the men, do you? I've never thought about that. Very, very true. Like Mariah Carey, the original diva.
Yeah.
You're pulling the female down. What would you say are your female musical influences?
So I grew up listening to Julie London and Nina Simone, sort of the great jazz singers.
Yeah.
But then the classics, God, Steps, S Club.
Oh my God, I love you.
And the Spice Girls were just my...
Now we're getting down to the nitty-gritty.
Now we see what you're made of.
No, but I was always Baby Spice because I think Emma Bunton and I share a birthday. And then I was blonde and it was just...
It's just an obvious thing.
It's obvious.
It's a win-win. We are very lucky because you're going to perform a live song for us.
I am. I'm going to...
No, I was going to say, tell me what you're performing. I'm very excited about this.
I'm going to sing a song by Nina Simone, Feeling Good.
Yes.
Just because she's inspired me as a woman and as a singer. So I thought I'd give you a bit of that. Shall I?
Go for it.
Get the guitar.
Are the tears from me going to happen now?
Oh, no, probably not.
Look, Rach, don't worry about that. There'll be no crying.
It's too early for that. So this is Feeling Good. Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Reeds
drifting on by. That's how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom in the tree, that's how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. And I'm feeling good. Stars when you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. So good, so good.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. Oh, could you just stay here? I mean, I'm here till 5. I'm in a rush.
I'll just serenade you all afternoon.
That'd be amazing. We don't mind at all. Dragging you down with me. That is incredible. Where can people find your music?
All online. I'm on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, and Official Rothwell, because I'm very official.
You are.
On social media, well, on Instagram, and then Rothwell Music UK on Twitter.
That is brilliant. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you for having me.
We are now going to play Velvet Heart.
Yes.
By yourself. So enjoy, and we'll see you guys in a few minutes.
Fall into lust, but you grow into love. See with your gut, but you reap with your mind. Don't get me wrong, he's a nice looking boy, but you don't know his mum, does he treat her right? You've only known him for like a weekend, but you're falling, falling head first. What's worse, you're calling, calling, but you won't listen to my warning, warning, before you're in too deep. Tell me where you're going with your velvet heart. But I don't have faith. I'm clinging to the edge, happens every time. Waiting for the knock at 3 a.m. You put it in a box, move back to mine. You've only known him for like a weekend, but you're falling, falling head first. Watch what you call. In 2D. Tell me where you're going with your velvet.
warning before you're in too deep. Tell me where you're going with your velvet heart.
The incredible Rothwell there in the studio and her one of her latest songs. But we are going to go straight to the phone lines, because on the phone right now is surfer and model Laura Crane. Laura, welcome.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I think I'm all right. I think I'm about, I've tried to work this out. I think I'm about 19 hours in.
Yeah,
I hope I'm 19 hours in.
I hope
it's not less. I really, really do. but I'm doing good, and it's wonderful to have you on the phone lines. You are a UK champion. Well, you're a UK champion surfer at age 14. That is madness. So tell me, how long have you been surfing? How did it start for you?
So originally, I'm from Bristol. And my parents, we moved to North Devon when I was about 9 or 10. And then I kind of learned when I was down there, because there wasn't really much else to do in North Devon apart from be at the beach and be in the ocean. And I guess I just picked it up pretty quickly, started doing some of the like smaller local competitions, and kind of moved on to the nationals. And yeah, became British champion, represented Team GB for a few years.
Wow.
And then I got sponsored by Billabong, and then that was it. Sort of started travelling the world, doing kind of what I dreamed of doing when I was a kid. So, yeah, it was pretty cool.
That is incredible. How, I would say, like, what is the toughest part about surfing? Because it's one of those sports I've not, I guess because I don't live near the sea, it's something I've never tried. So what would you say is the toughest? If someone's listening to this right now and they want to start surfing, what is the toughest thing about learning to surf?
I guess it massively depends on where you're from. In the UK, I guess the toughest thing about it would definitely be the cold, by a long shot. but yeah, probably in the UK, definitely the cold, but else, where, I mean, there's not that much bad about it. I'm obviously biased, but
I think that's brilliant. When did the modelling start?
Modelling started probably when I was about 15.
Okay, so it was like hand in hand, really. The surfing and the modelling both kind of went together.
Yeah, so I was sponsored by Billabong, and I modelled for them for 7 years, doing their kind of like campaigns and things like that, alongside other brands that I was kind of sponsored for and things like that. Then had an agency in London that I did some bits with and things like that. So it all kind of like started trickling in after the surf thing started off, really.
And how did you find, hello, this is Michaela, Laura. How did you find the transition from surfer to model? Obviously, you're still doing the surfing, but like, obviously, did you find it quite a different industry to work in? Did you find, you know, that it was like, you know, fish out of water? Or
I mean, I think I'm lucky because a lot of the modelling I do is always kind of to do with either sports or surfing.
Yeah.
So it's never really like too far apart. It's not like I'm going and walking New York Fashion Week or anything like that. So it's not, I mean, for me, it's never been anything that's kind of really pushed me into a situation that I don't feel comfortable or anything like that. So it's, I think I've enjoyed it probably equally as much as the surfing, but I've definitely made some amazing friends from it and all of those kinds of bits and travelled the world with it. So, yeah, it's been...
Oh, fantastic. So, fully embraced.
Yeah, 100%.
Laura, this is obviously a show for the He for She campaign, men and women working together. Is surfing more male-dominated?
I get asked that a lot. I think probably 10 years ago, you would have seen a totally different sport and probably a completely different answer from me. But I think in the last probably 5 years, there's been a real like push, and I think girls have made like a massive leap towards it being, you know, earning the same money, and if not in some situations more, because I guess the whole Instagram, social media thing is a lot more sellable, I think, for the like female side of it now these days. So yeah, I think it's definitely worlds apart from where it was about 10 years ago. There was competitions that girls just weren't allowed to compete in. They didn't have hold the events in certain places because they thought it was too big or too dangerous for the girls, and then the girls sort of put their foot down and were like, no, you know what, we can do this. And surfing is definitely not one of those sports that tries to create a barrier, that's for sure.
Which is incredible because, you know, we've spoken to a lot of actors, comedians, so many different people from all walks of life, and they, especially creatives, that have suffered sexism. I mean, actually, have you suffered sexism? If you haven't in surfing, how about modelling? Have you suffered any sexism there? No.
Which is great.
It's amazing.
I think growing up at being a surfer, I've been like surrounded by boys your whole life. So you get like, you're kind of given like tough skin kind of thing. So yeah, I don't think I ever got the chance to be sort of put in that position. And I guess in surfing, we're all literally just one big family. Like, it sounds really cliche, but we've traveled the world together since we were so young. Yeah. So the boys always have the girls' back, and the girls have the boys' back, and vice versa. Like, there's never really. Oh, you're a girl, like, you're not going to come surf with us, you know, we all do the same thing because we love to do it. So there's never, I think surfing's definitely a rare one. It's definitely a different industry for sure. In modelling,
I guess the sea's no colder to one sex than the other.
definitely. I mean, it's so different. I always say to people, one day I'm kind of like lounging around on the beach, like surfing and having a hell of a time, and next time in a studio in a photo shoot. But I mean, it's all relative, I suppose.
Yeah, it's very true. And, you know, let's talk about very quickly inspirational women. Who would you say are your inspirational, either your inspirational woman or inspirational women?
Inspirational women. I'm a massive fangirl of Jessica Ennis, like massive fangirl.
Very good answer. Amazing.
I think she's awesome. I think she's really cool. I mean, what she does is amazing, and she's beautiful, and I think she uses her beauty in a way that, I mean, seriously, she's made like an amazing brand, and I think she's definitely somebody for girls to look up to, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, look, Laura Crane, thank you so much for talking to us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Cheers from you guys as well.
Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.
That's Laura Crane there, surfer and a model. I would love to be a surfer. That's what I'm going to say.
Well, I've actually just got a text through from a friend of mine, and she's saying that her husband is not going into the sea. It's too cold, which is a one-off, and he's a surfer. Unheard of.
Literally, it is absolutely unheard of. This is the 24-hour live marathon show here at FUBAR Radio. We are supporting the He for She campaign. We'd love your donations, so do text us UNWN15 followed by the amount you would like to donate to 70070. All money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. We are here until 5 p.m. so don't go anywhere.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
Again, I do love that ident because it just reminds me this is 24 hours. Michaela, I believe you are leaving me.
I am.
Dead to me. You think you know a girl. You think you know a girl. It's fine. It's fine. I can look after myself. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people find out more about Made With Style?
It's madewithstylelondon.com. Obviously, it's made M-A-I-D as a bridesmaid. And at Made With Style London is the social media. And yeah, there's lots of exciting things coming up. We've got a subscription, actually, is going to be our latest thing, where we will actually be partnering with a fantastic charity who are there to fight human trafficking. So look out for more details on that.
Fantastic. Well, Michaela, thank you for joining us. It's been brilliant. We are going to take a little breather. I am going to take a little breather. This is Alicia Keys' Girlfriend. Enjoy. I'll be back in a few moments.